Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Katie Weaver and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Katie Weaver.
The human rights group Amnesty International has criticized several European countries for blocking migrant rescue ships from their ports. Amnesty International called the situation shameful. The group said Europe's migrant policy was putting lives in danger at sea and also in the country of Libya. Most asylum seekers leaving Africa appear to be leaving from Libya. The rights group made its statement after a migrant rescue ship was permitted to unload people in Malta after spending 19 days at sea. Almost 50 migrants were on the ship. Several European ports had refused it entry. Matteo De Bellis of Amnesty International said the problem is the result of Europe's decision to let Libya deal with border security. De Bellis said that non-governmental organizations, or NGOs, are operating the rescue ships, but they face hard choices. He said, "The only thing that the Libyan Coast Guard can tell the NGOs is to go back to Libya and disembark people there. But it is forbidden by international law to disembark people in a place where they are going to be exposed to torture." Many European countries have ended their rescue efforts in the Mediterranean Sea. Now, aid groups have stepped in. Many southern European countries say it is unfair that under EU law, they must take in the refugees. De Bellis said, "There is no mechanism enabling European government, European states, to share responsibility among them for the assistance of those asylum seekers." Spain recently blocked the Proactive Open Arms rescue ship from leaving port. Italy's Interior Minister, Matteo Salvini, praised the action. Salvini said, "If the European Union and the other European countries will follow up words with actions, Europe will be rescued. But if words will not be followed by actions, Europe doesn't exist." The EU has said the flow of migrants to European countries has fallen by 92% from its highest levels in 2015. Amnesty International said this means that concerns about migration causing problems in Europe are false. De Bellis said, "There are constituencies that believe Europe is under siege from migration." Several EU member states now have anti-immigration governments, making it unlikely that the EU will agree on refugee limits anytime soon. I'm Katie Weaver.
Thank you.
In 1947, locals first found the Dead Sea Scrolls in caves near the city of Jerusalem. The scrolls contain ancient religious writings, some more than 2,000 years old. Now, in the cliffs above the Dead Sea, archaeologists are digging higher and deeper into hundreds of unexplored caves. They are hoping to find more parchment, and they are racing against antiquities robbers. The writings are on animal skin, known as parchment, and old paper, called papyrus. They describe Jewish society and religion before and after the time of Jesus. Oren Gutfeld, an archaeologist at Hebrew University in Jerusalem, said, "In the last few years, we noticed new pieces of scrolls and parchments arrive on the black market. It drove us to return to the caves." In 2017, his team discovered remains of storage jugs in an unexplored cave known as 52B at Qumran. But any scrolls they may have held were missing. At about 200 meters above the level of the Dead Sea, the cave is higher than where the scrolls were first found in 1947. It is not known whether the cave may have been a good hiding place. Toward the back of the cave, volunteers sift through buckets of dirt in a narrow tunnel that could extend about 10 meters. People thought there was nothing left to find. There just wasn't incentive to do this, said Randall Price. He is a professor at Liberty University, a Christian college in the United States that helped fund the exploration. Price said 52B did not appear on previous explorations and could bring some secrets. In the narrow streets of Jerusalem's old city, Eitan Klein checks on dealers to make sure their goods are in an official registry and are not being traded on the black market. He is the deputy director of the Israel Antiquities Authority. In late 2016, the authority recovered part of a piece of papyrus from the 7th century BC with the word Jerusalem. The papyrus had been taken from a cave by antiquities robbers. Klein said, "The assumption is that there are still artifacts inside the caves waiting to be found. The question is, who will discover them?" In 1952, archaeologists also found what became known as the Copper Scroll in Qumran. Unlike other scrolls written on parchment or papyrus, this was a list of 64 hiding places for gold and valuables etched on copper. Hebrew University's Gutfeld said the treasure referred to what may be from the ancient Jewish temple in Jerusalem. In 2006, his team found two man-made tunnels near Qumran that he believes matched a description of the Valley of Shadow in the Copper Scroll. One of the tunnels, about 2 meters high, extended 125 meters underground. No treasure was found, but Gutfeld promised to continue searching in new spots. He said, "I'm not a treasure hunter. I'm an archaeologist. We hope to find any hint or relationship to what we know from the text of the Copper Scroll." New discoveries could also help solve the debate over who wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Pope Francis has joined a technology tool designed to permit people to connect spiritually. The Pope spoke about the Click to Pray app during his weekly Sunday religious address at St. Peter's Square in Vatican City. Pope Francis, who is 82, once said he considered himself a disaster with technology. But he demonstrated the app to the crowd gathered in St. Peter's Square. After launching Click to Pray from a tablet, he asked the person assisting if he had done it correctly. His helper confirmed that he had. The app was first launched in 2016, but the Pope announced that he was now adding his own personal prayer profile. Internet and social networks are a resource of our time, he told followers gathered for his message. A way to stay in touch with others, to share values and projects, and to express the desire to form a community. Today, he added, the internet can also provide a way for people across the world to pray as a community, to pray together. The announcement came as the Pope prepared to visit Panama for World Youth Day 2019. The International Catholic Gathering is expected to draw more than 150,000 young people from around the world. The Pope said he believes the app is a good way for young Catholics and others to share their prayers through the internet and electronic devices. I, above all, invite you, young people, to download the app, he told the crowd. The app will inform users what the leader of the world's 1.3 billion Roman Catholics is praying for so they can join him. Here I will put in requests for prayers for the church mission, the Pope said. Users can also learn what other members of the social network are praying for and join them in prayer as well. The Click to Pray website also lists worldwide prayer campaigns users can join. It said that so far in January, more than 1.4 million prayers had been added to Click to Pray. During his address, Pope Francis spoke of One World event that could unite users of the app in prayer. Last weekend, 170 migrants were feared lost in the Mediterranean after leaving in small boats from Libya and Morocco. They were looking for a future for their lives, and perhaps they were victims of human traffickers, Pope Francis said. Let us pray for them and for those who are responsible for what happened. The Click to Pray app is currently available in English, Spanish, Italian, French, Portuguese, and German. Versions will be launched soon in Chinese and Vietnamese. The app is available for both Android and iOS devices. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. As we reported in our last program, slavery supporters failed to push through Congress a bill to make Kansas a slave state. Congress instead let the people of Kansas vote on the statehood constitution, written by pro-slavery men. The people rejected the constitution, and slavery supporters gave up the fight for Kansas. Here are Steve Ember and Bob Doty to continue the story.
The problem of slavery continued to divide the North and South. Northerners warned that slavery could spread no farther. Southerners threatened to leave the Union unless Southern rights were protected. In the far West, one could forget this bitter dispute. There were no slaves in the West. The land and the weather were not right for the kind of farming that used slaves.
The West was growing quickly. Gold had brought thousands of settlers to California 10 years earlier. New discoveries of gold and silver now were leading men to Colorado, Arizona, and Nevada. "Don't go," warned the New York Tribune, "if you have a job or a farm. But if you have neither," it said, "and can get $50, then go to Colorado." There were many men without jobs or farms in the summer of 1858. The country had suffered a serious economic depression the year before, and jobs were difficult to find. Thousands left cities in the East. The first ones to reach Colorado reported that gold was easy to find. They said any man who worked hard could find $5 to $10 worth of gold a day, and sometimes even more.
The thousands who rushed to Colorado soon found that there was not as much gold as expected. The valuable metal became harder to find. No longer could it be washed from the bottoms of mountain streams. Men had to dig into the mountains of rock to get it. Huge digging machines and crushers were needed to get the gold from the rock. These machines were expensive. Few men had enough money to buy them. Some of the miners organized companies. They borrowed money from Eastern banks or sold shares of their companies. In a few years, almost all of the gold from Colorado came from the mining companies.
Many of those who went west to search for gold stayed to become farmers or storekeepers. Others moved farther west to find gold in Nevada or California. Some cleared the ground of trees and cut them into wood for houses. Such timber from the forests of Oregon and Washington was sold in California and Mexico, even in China and Hawaii. A few men recognized the need for transportation across the nation. Engineers planned 4 railroads, but Northern and Southern leaders could not agree on which one to build first. Until a railroad could be built, supplies were carried west in wagons, pulled by horses or oxen. 3 men, Russell, Majors, and Waddell, formed a transportation company in 1855 to carry government supplies to soldiers in the West. They started with 500 wagons. 3 years later, the company had 3,500 wagons and 40,000 oxen.
Getting letters to and from the West was not easy in the 1850s. Ships brought mail to San Francisco 2 times a month. And once each month, mail would arrive in California after a slow trip by wagon from St. Louis, Missouri. The federal government decided to send mail overland 2 times a week to California. It gave the job of carrying the letters to a new company, the Overland Mail Company. The mail was carried by train or boat to St. Louis. Then it was put on Overland Company stage coaches, light wagons pulled by 4 or 6 horses. The company was told to take the mail along a 4,000-kilometer southern route through Arkansas, Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona. The mail arrived in Los Angeles 24 days after it left St. Louis.
There was a shorter way across the country, but the postal chief was a Southerner, A.V. Brown. He believed stagecoach travel might lead the way for a railroad, and he wanted a Southern railroad to California. Brown said the Southern route was the only one that could be kept open in all seasons. He said the other routes would be closed by snow in winter. The overland stagecoaches were large enough to carry 4 passengers, but not many people went to California in the coaches. The coaches never stopped for very long, only to change horses or drivers, and there were not many places to eat. Also, the trip was dangerous because of hostile Indians.
The shortest distance between Missouri and California was across the central part of the country. The Russell, Majors, and Waddell Company decided to show that this central route could be used all year. It began a speedy mail service called the Pony Express. Letters were carried by riders on fast horses. Stations with fresh horses were built about 24 kilometers apart all along the way. A rider would change horses at each station until he had traveled 120 kilometers. Then he would give his letters to another rider. In this way, the letters would be carried between California and Missouri. The first letters sent by Pony Express from California took 10 days to reach Missouri. The Pony Express lasted only 18 months. It was no longer needed after a telegraph line was completed to San Francisco.
As communications and transportation improved, the government was able to increase its control over the West. But closer ties were not welcomed between the government and a religious group known as the Mormons. The Mormon religion was started by a young New England man named Joseph Smith. In 1823, at the age of 18. Smith claimed that an angel told him of a golden book. He said the book contained God's words to the ancient people of America. Smith said he was able to read the strange writing in this book and put it into English. He called this work the Book of Mormon.
He organized a church and made himself its leader. Many people became Mormons. They believed themselves to be a special people chosen by God. Mormons worked hard. They helped each other and shared with those in need. People who did not agree with the beliefs of the Mormons did not like them. Trouble developed between Mormons and other people. Joseph Smith was forced to move his people from New York to Ohio and then to Missouri. The Mormons seemed finally to have found a home in Illinois. They built their own town and called it Nauvoo. They governed themselves and had their own defense force. The Mormons did so well that Nauvoo became the fastest-growing city in Illinois. Then some members of the group split apart because of a new message Smith claimed to have received from God. Smith said God gave permission for Mormons to have more than one wife. This was polygamy, and it was opposed by almost all people. Some of the Mormons who left the church published a newspaper criticizing Smith and the other Mormon leaders. Followers ordered by Smith destroyed the newspaper's publishing equipment. This caused non-Mormons to demonstrate and demand that Smith be punished. Smith was arrested and put in jail in Carthage, Illinois. His brother also was arrested. An angry mob attacked the jail and shot both Smith and his brother to death. The governor of Illinois ordered the Mormons to leave his state. He said only this would prevent further violence. There was no choice. They had to leave. The Mormons had a new leader, Brigham Young. Young decided to take his people west and find a new home for them. He wanted a place where they would be safe, where no one could interfere with their religion. Brigham Young told his people that he had seen their new home in a dream. He said they would search for it in the west, for a wide, beautiful valley. He said he would recognize it when he saw it.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.